Hey, everybody, welcome into the Heal the Hurt podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode. I am really excited to connect with a new friend of mine and introduce you guys to her. She is a coach and super into fitness, and I'm going to have her introduce herself, but Coach Tara Garrison, welcome to the show. Welcome here. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day and your busy schedule to join us for a few minutes.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited to dive in.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about you, what you currently do. And I had mentioned to you before, not so much what brought you here to this space that you're in, what keeps you here? Mm-hmm. What keeps you going in this work that you do? And with that, I'm hoping to hear maybe some of the fun struggles, but then also some of those inspiring moments, those experiences that you have where you go, yep, I'm here for a reason.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that question. And I truly, what brought me here is what keeps me here, because the pain and struggle that I had to go through to experience life the way that I live it now is like, it's so amazing to be able to like live in light when you've lived in darkness and pain, you know. It's just like, oh my gosh, I love life now. And to be able to share that with other people and see them go through it. I mean, God, like, can anybody ask for anything better than that? It's such an honor. And so I'll share, you know, like, it's funny on the gram, on the Instagram, you know, it's like, I call it my Instagram costumes. And so you see this chick that loves being in the gym and has muscles and healthy eating and stuff. And I'm like, dude, if you only knew like why this matters to me so much. Like, you know, sometimes we go on social media and we look at people and we're like, oh, like she has everything all together. And I'm like, the reason I live this way is because I call health my gateway drug to personal awakening. I mean, my life completely changed when I got healthy. And so let me give you guys some backstory. I'll try to do the nutshell here. Life was very hard as a kid. Very, very hard. My parents were divorced. I was the youngest of five. My parents were divorced when I was like a baby or toddler. I don't remember them being married. My mom's undiagnosed schizophrenic with severe trauma. Her dad actually killed her mom and himself when she was 5 years old. Oh, wow. And he had mental illness on top of being a war veteran, from World War II, and had super bad PTSD from that. And so my mom, you know, grew up with undiagnosed mental illness and severe trauma that there was no psychological help for. She never had therapy or anything, you know? And so, God, she did the best she could. You know, she really, really tried hard. I love my mom so much. It was hard though, growing up, you know, it was mostly my mom. My dad was every other weekend. We were very, very poor. 'Cause you know, when you're schizophrenic and a single mom of five kids, like life is hard to probably, you know, even to manage your own life, let alone having kids. And she loved us so much, but it was chaotic. We were, you know, she was gone a lot. I think she used escaping as like kind of a coping mechanism for life. So we're kind of left to fend for ourselves a lot. I had a family member that was abusing me. So I've experienced, you know, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, all those things. And yeah, home was just, it was very, very messy, dirty. Even it was just like not a good place to be. We didn't have air conditioning sometimes in the middle of hot summers in Virginia, or heat, you know, I mean, really, we had like a kerosene heater in our kitchen as the only heat in the whole house many winters, you know, and not like, I don't know, I cannot figure out any food that I can eat here. Right. So it was hard. And I, you know, it's interesting because I think I was gifted with, I mean, it sounds weird to say it, but I feel like I was gifted with intelligence, which I'm grateful for, and a natural drive. I've always loved seeing what I'm capable of. I think it's fun. And so in school, I did really well. And I think I also loved school because it was like clean and organized and had food and I knew what to expect. And it was like, yay, I like it here a lot, you know? And so in high school, I was, you know, graduated top of my class and honor society president, Spanish honor society president, you know, show choir captain, color flag captain, starting leadership clubs. Like, you know, I was very, very that way. And as I've processed my healing journey, I've looked back at that. I'm like, was I just using achievement as a way to prove self-worth? And I'm like, I don't really think so. I think it may have been a a better place to be than home. But also, like, I've just always been wired that way of like, what's possible for me? Like, if other people can do it, how come I can't, you know? And I think if you grew up in an environment in which you feel anyway, and we can talk about, you know, victim mindset, because that's definitely something I had to work on. If you feel like other people have life better than you do, like for me, I feel like there's two ways people can go. One is feeling sorry for yourself and bitter and a chip on your shoulder, or the other one is curious. And I was really curious. I was like, what are they experiencing? What can I learn from other people so that my life can be like that? You know? And so I definitely chose that road. Now, I grew up LDS, Mormon. My parents were both converts to the church. I had not processed any of that from childhood. It was just this total bypass, you know. Nope. I mean, I was married for 13 years. I got married right after my sophomore year of college. I never even told my ex-husband that I had been sexually molested my entire childhood. Like, never. It was so like, nope, didn't happen, you know? Right. And you know, I had four kids. I built like the quote unquote perfect life. You know, we lived right in front of the Mormon temple and had the big yard and the boat and the truck, and I had cookies after school and like all these things. And I had not processed any of that. And, you know, what's interesting is towards the end of my marriage, I like to share, I mean, especially Heal to Her. I mean, I'm very, very open about the pains in my life that I've been through, because I think a lot of time we kind of blow our problems out of proportion because we feel like we're the only one that's suffering. And then when other people are willing to share that they're also suffering, it's like, oh, okay, I'm not alone in this. Like, other people go through crap too, you know, it's very healing. And so towards the end of my marriage, and I've asked my ex-husband if he's okay with me sharing this, and he said, yes, as long as you share like this part. So give me a second. So, you know, here I am in my perfect little life. And my ex-husband revealed to me that he had been addicted to pornography at a pretty, you know, like our entire marriage. And it was interesting what happened inside of me, because on the, you know, in the mind, I was like, that's okay. Thank you for telling me. Like, I will support you through this. Like, we got this, like, you know, but emotionally in my emotional body, because I had learned so well as a coping mechanism from childhood to just ignore that and just go straight in the mind and just like, everything's fine. But emotionally I was crushed, you know, and I was, you know, not hardly admitting to myself that I was dealing with all these feelings of not enoughness, and went straight into, I will fix this. Right. And so actually that is really what sent my fitness journey to like another freaking level. It's like, I gotta be enough for him. You know, I gotta be hotter than all those porn chicks. And the part he wanted me to share is, you know, and if there's Mormon listeners listening, I'm like, I'm not trying to offend anyone, but the real reality was that forbidden aspect of like shame, and you are bad if you look at this, and like that, all that toxic forbidden fruit shame cycle that he was in. He's like, that really is what I felt caused me to feel like I was addicted to pornography. Now that we have left Mormonism, he doesn't feel that anymore. So it's been interesting. You know, he's been on his healing journey, and we're in a really good place with co-parenting. But I got into fitness because I wanted to prove my worth. I did. But what's so crazy is I feel like no matter what you're going through, you could be going through like the dark night of the soul, and there could also be amazing, beautiful things happening in your life at the same time. And I feel like that's what happened to me with fitness, because while, yeah, I had not healed my internal stuff, and I was in this big journey of proving my value, and that wasn't healthy, I also was learning so much about the body and what I'm capable of. And I was like, this is fascinating, and starting to take life by the horns and becoming more confident and like realizing that I can change my habits. I can change things. Like, this is cool. And so, man, woo, I went through a little stinger there in my life. Like, I started to have some questions about my religion that I was super devoted to. I mean, I didn't know a single person who wasn't Mormon. My whole world was Mormon. Right. And so I started to have questions, and I had the courage to like really look into them finally. And I found way more than I could bargain for. And I realized that for me, that was not my truth anymore, and that I had to leave. And that was scary. It was scary. And I did it. And, it was this like self-honoring moment, because I knew within myself, like, I had to show up for myself and what I felt was true. That's another story for another time. I have a whole YouTube video about it, if anybody wants to watch it, what that experience was like. That was freaking crazy. And then, you know, within a few months, I realized that our marriage had become so broken that really the only reason I had stayed in it for many years had been because of the religious shame. of staying in it. And so 3 months later I got divorced. So here I was, this Mormon stay-at-home mom for over a decade. And now I'm a newbie personal trainer. I've just left my religion. I've just basically lost everyone I know and I'm divorced. Like I couldn't even see which way was up. Wow. And man, you know what happened after that? I found myself a nice narcissist. And I know people get triggered when people say narcissist, but I'm telling you guys, like, I'm like, no, this was, he had severe psychological, he admitted to a lot of this after, you know, a year and a half I was in this relationship. He's like, yeah, I saw Tara coming and I used her for everything she had. I, you know, he ran up, talked me into, you know, opening up all, using all my credit cards because this is how entrepreneurs do it. And would just go on shopping sprees. And I had not healed again. I still had not healed. Mm-hmm. I had a little ounce of self-confidence, but I hadn't healed all these patterns of people pleasing and abandoning myself and trying to, yeah, I'll do whatever you want. So you love me kind of energy. And I lost everything after that. Truly, like I lost every penny to my name. So it's like, I've already had this life devastation once getting divorced and now I'm here I am. And I have lost every penny to my name. I'm going through a bankruptcy. I'm about to lose my car. I had to ask my ex-husband to take my kids because I was staying with a friend. I didn't have anywhere to go. I had no family who could help me. I also lost child support and alimony during that time. And I'm still like, what, 2 years into my career as a personal trainer, super lucrative, guys. Because he took the kids and I had moved in anyway, long story short, it was scary. It was a scary time. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was the darkest, most humbling time, scary, but it was this moment. I call it my body slam from the universe, where it was like, girl, you gotta get real with yourself for a second here. Like there's something going on inside of you that has led you to this point in your life. You know, it was I definitely wanted to go into the victim stories of like, I was so nice and he just took advantage of me. And everybody wanted to support me in that story, right? They're like, he's horrible. What a monster. He should be in prison. Like, you know, so it's like, it's when you're in your victim story and everybody else in it with you, it's real easy to stay there. Cause then you don't have to take any accountability for any part of being in that relationship. Right. And, one of the greatest gifts during that time was my friend, Drew Manning. He introduced me to a woman named Catherine Dixon here in Utah who does the work of Byron Katie. Oh man. And in my first session, you know, you work on stories in this. And that my story was that this guy had manipulated and used me. And during that session, one of the key, like life-changing moments for me was when she had me run through an example of a time that he had manipulated me. It was a pretty good story, man. It's a pretty good story. Everyone was like, what the crap? That's so messed up. And she's like, you know, when he was encouraging you to do this thing that you didn't want to do, did you tell him you didn't want to do it? And I was like, no. And she's like, oh, so you lied to him. And I was like, yeah, crap. And the tables got turned. And that was the beginning of my journey of realizing that the results that I was getting in my life were centered in me. Right. And that just threw me on the most empowering personal development journey of owning my stuff and taking a hard look at myself naked in the mirror and with compassion and love, not being hard on myself and just saying, hey, girl. Okay. So see what happens when you don't communicate, see what happens when you don't stand up for what you think, see it, you know? And so, sorry, it's the longest story ever, but I'm just kind of sharing like the background of why I'm so passionate. You know, I do health and mindset coaching now because I lived a life where I was disempowered and sad. There was a point in there that I just was like, dude, I can just cross these double yellows and like, this can all be over. And then I was like, well, I don't want to hurt somebody else. So shoot, you know, I mean, I've been like low, like just hated myself. Like, what have you done with your life? Like, you know, I felt those dark feelings of just like, just feeling like a loser and like, there's nothing to look forward to. And I'm through this journey, through those lows of like taking ownership of like, I can change this, has been, like I live a life now. When I started doing the personal development journey, I told you guys I was zero. I was at zero. I was living with a friend. I had gotten this little job. I was barely making ends meet. Within 3 months of really diving into mindset, I was making over $10,000 a month. I was lit up about life. I was saying no to cruddy guys that my pattern was to be attracted to because they were jerks and like control. And I was like, dude, no, like get out of here. Like, I could not tell you how, what a life-changing difference it makes. So like knowing what it's like to live in a low and knowing what it's like to keep these patterns, these habits, these things that build, like that's what keeps me going. And now being able to share it and I'll end this whole huge long thing real quick with this. I love Viktor Frankl. When you asked me this question, I pulled this up. Oh my gosh. If any of you have not read Man's Search for Meaning, oh, if you're in a hard, going through a hard time, this guy was an Austrian neurologist and philosopher who was in a concentration camp. So I'd say he was going through a pretty hard time. He's living in a concentration camp. And this is what he said. He said, everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And so like, dude, yeah, you might be a victim. You might have been put through something freaking hard, but there's a difference between being a victim and then choosing to live in a victim mindset for the rest of your life because of it, you know? Yes. And that's what I learned from that experience. So, yeah.
I love that. I love that. And I agree with that completely. We talked a little bit before we started recording that, we go through pain, we go through struggle, and that's a part of life. And, so often I look at my journey and then those that I'm blessed to work with, or be close to and see that struggle and recognize as we get to the other side, all that we learn, all that we gain, everything, all of that progress, we wouldn't have it in that way, in that amount. And at that time, had we gone a different path, or for those of us who've been hurt, had our abuser, our offender made different choices, I would love to just wash out all of the pain and the suffering and the struggle that has occurred throughout society and that will continue to occur. But we don't have that control. We don't have that amount of power and authority.
I don't want to get rid of it. I don't. Because you can't feel the pleasure without it. You can't grow without it. It's a stimulus. I mean, trust me, I am a huge fan of getting rid of unnecessary suffering, but I have learned, I'm like, suffering is it's part of the plan, the journey that I think, you know, but yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean,
well, I think it's that we, and I try not to say this for others, but in my own looking back, I wouldn't recognize things the way I do today. Right. Totally. I wouldn't see or feel things the way that I do today had those things not happened. Do we wish that we could have gotten the lessons without that pain? That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
But we come to a level of acceptance where we go, I would have chosen so many different paths that might've been less painful, but they would not bring me the joy, in my opinion.
Yeah, no.
They wouldn't bring me the joy that I experienced today.
Yeah.
And I think those lows, so many people have talked about, as low as we get, as low as it can become, we'll rebound. We can rebound the opposite way with goodness, with height, with productivity, spirituality, and all that positive stuff. It's not a given. We don't just snap our fingers and it happens miraculously. It comes through so much work.
And I think what's so beautiful about it is you learn what works and what doesn't. And I think I'd say anybody I know, and I know you've been on a similar path, anybody I know that's come on the other side of this like dark night of the soul has learned that being mean to yourself about it and pressuring yourself and like telling yourself you're not good enough and blah, and why can't you just doesn't work. It does not work. It just keeps you in that space. And I have noticed the people that I know that have come on the other side of these dark nights of the soul have learned that what works is self-compassion, forgiveness of self, forgiveness of others. And that can be real hard to get to, especially if someone's really wronged you. It's like, no, they do not deserve to be forgiven. Right. And I understand that. I mean, I have a friend whose son was murdered, right? Like, I get it, man. Like, you don't want to, it's like, they don't deserve my forgiveness. But the thing is that you deserve to forgive so you can be happy again, you know? And that I'm never going to pressure him to get to that space ever. If you know, I get it. Like, that's intense. But that guy, that crazy guy I dated, I was withholding forgiveness because I'm like, no, he doesn't deserve forgiveness. He's freaking mother ever, you know, that's what's going through my mind. I'm like, he doesn't deserve it. And it's not about him. I'm never going to see him again. It's right. about what's happening inside of me, you know? And just a quick, I don't know, what's the word? Like, ploy? I don't know. Just a vote for doing the Ho'oponopono. If anybody's dealing with forgiveness, if you have not done the Hawaiian practice of Ho'oponopono, it's, you know, you write a letter and it's thank you. I love you. I forgive you. I'm sorry. Somebody's kept telling me to do that. And I'm really grateful for this friend. He kept pushing me. He's like, you need to do the Ho'opono about that dude. You keep talking about it. I can tell you're not healed from it. Like, and I was like, I'm not going to say I'm sorry to you. I'm sorry for what, you know, like that was kind of my mentality. And oh man, that thing healed me so quick. So yeah, it's a really cool tool that I found in my journey. So side note.
I love that. I think so often that when people have wronged us, we withhold that forgiveness because we think, well, they didn't apologize to us. They didn't right. take accountability. They didn't, right. whatever it is, so on and so forth.
Right.
We're probably right. But let me take that back. We're valid in that, whether we're right or not. Somebody said once, I want to say it was one of like Shakespearean or something like that, but it's we've all seen it around Instagram, on Facebook, you know, on billboards somewhere, but it talks about forgiveness and it says like withholding forgiveness isn't like, it doesn't hurt the other person. It's, right. it's like taking a poison pill and waiting for the other person to die.
Yeah.
And there's so many variations of that. And I think one principle that I've tried to teach and tried to embody, and it's hard. This mm-hmm. is a hard thing to do.
Oh yeah.
I don't think we can do it on our own. And I think
me
we
too.
Need some support.
That's what but, I was going to say.
What do I believe in? What are my morals? What are my values? Do I believe in forgiveness? I sure as hell want to be forgiven myself. I mess up and I've come from some dark places, and by no means being perfect, I'm going to trip and fall again. So I want to be able to, I want grace. I want people to go, man, he's trying, you know, wow, look how far he's come, and it's still a work in progress. Let's cut him some slack. I want that. Mm-hmm. So why would I be deserving of that if I don't offer that up to other people? And so I think I've got to live based on the principle rather than somebody deserves it or not.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of those people that have hurt us in the past, they don't. It's not that they deserve it. That doesn't matter as yeah. much as right. me letting go, me processing, yeah. okay, this is no longer hurting me and it doesn't have to hurt me. Let me let it go. Let me move on and move forward and surround myself with the things in my life and in my world that I really want, that are really my priorities. Because yeah. those old relationships can wreck our current relationships. They hold us back.
Yeah.
Because we don't trust. We don't want to be vulnerable. Right. We don't want to get hurt again.
Right.
We become jealous. We become suspicious. We become scared and nervous and all those other things. Mm-hmm. And so that healing process from the past, healing the past helps now so much. Mm-hmm. And it helps tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, next year so incredibly. And I don't think we really recognize that because we're yeah. stuck. We get stuck yeah. on that pain.
And that's why what you said, like, we need help. None of the deeper levels of forgiveness that I've gotten in my life have come from me alone. It's come from either plant medicine ceremonies with shamans or doing the work of Byron Katie with Catherine, like somebody else helping me. I just couldn't get there. I was stuck in a loop, you know, it's just, this is the way I think. And I needed new information and I need to see things from a different perspective that I've never even considered before. So I think that's so key. Like if you're really struggling with that. And then the other part of it is I definitely learned that, like, if you have a hard time forgiving yourself for things, and I didn't even really connect with that energy. I was like, I don't know. I think I forgive myself for things. I don't know. It wasn't until I dove into, for me, it was the work of Byron Katie and, you know, working with Chris or like another therapist. I'm sure these are all common practices that are taught in psychology. But for me, it was like, I didn't even know what was happening inside of me. I didn't understand that I was withholding forgiveness. I was punishing myself for being in that relationship. It was like, what's wrong with you? You're so stupid. How could you not have seen that? Like all this negative self-talk that I didn't even realize was there until it started getting asked. It's like, how did you see yourself when that happened? And I'm like, oh, okay, God, I guess I do have some negative self-talk, you know, being able to become more self-compassionate and forgive myself. It makes it so much easier with other people. So a lot of it is the inner work there too. But yeah, I can't say enough. Like, and if whoever you're working with, if you're not getting there, like, you might want to try some other things too. You know, there's lots of healing modalities. Absolutely. And the last thing I'll say is one thing I definitely learned was, I went through this workshop where they had us do a physical release of, trauma. Right. And mine was all sitting on a couch, you know, and I thought I was in a really good place. And I witnessed this man who had never done anything like this. Like, they had punching bags, right? And he was just beating, he had been abused by his dad growing up. Holy cow. It makes me want to cry just thinking about it. Cause I just saw him like fall apart, beating this bag, just getting out all that stuff, you know? And I watched him and I was so grateful he was willing to do that in front of people, you know? And I thought, you know, I haven't done that. I have not like released this from like my physical body. Like, I have not done that. Can I get back to the place where I was mad and angry? I was like, I'm gonna conjure it up. I'm gonna conjure it up. Oh, yeah. And I did. And I freaking wailed on that thing and I cried and I called him every curse word in the book. And I just went off. And I cannot tell you the nervous system calming that I felt after that for like a week. Like, it was crazy. So, I know there's things like trauma release exercises and things like that. I'm like, look at babies and toddlers. They freaking beat on the ground. They do this when they're upset. So it's like, maybe like freaking let it out on your pillow or your bed or something. It was something that I really learned too. But yeah, it's like, and that was another thing. I didn't come up with that myself. That was at a workshop. So seek help on the forgiveness path, because there's so many people that are there and can help you if you're just willing to put yourself in those positions.
That is so spot on. And that reminds me, before I went out on my own and opened my practice, a lot of my work has been in residential treatment centers. And the last one that I was in, we had some good relationships in the community. And we had a friend who owned a junkyard. And then we had another friend who owned a towing company. And so the junkyard would donate a beat up car that they were going to crush
nice.
To our facility.
awesome.
Tow truck owner would have it delivered. And therapeutically, we would ask our clients to write a letter about all of the things that had hurt them. We just called it the anger letter because that was more appealing. What are you mad about?
Yeah.
And every time as they did that, I shouldn't say every time, most of the time, as they began to write about their anger, the letter changed and it became them writing about their hurt, about their pain.
Right.
Because I'm a firm believer that we're not mad. We're not just angry. Like, anger is a secondary emotion. We hear that all the time.
Right.
It's coming from somewhere. And that doesn't mean that people aren't just, you haven't been conditioned to just be a little more aggressive or a little bit more irritable or something like that. But I believe it's coming from somewhere. And we would get some of the biggest, toughest, strongest men, and some of the most, same thing with the women, and standoffish, and I'm not going there, and I'm tough, and I don't feel, I have no pain, I'm over it. We'd have them read that letter to our clinical team, and we'd support them, and we'd have a small group, not the entire facility, but a smaller group of their peers observing from a distance. So they couldn't really hear what was going on, but they could see and they could feel that energy, even from maybe 20 yards away or something like that. So they'd read that letter to us. We might ask some questions. We might prompt them a little bit. We might kind of support them in what we deemed was where they needed to focus. And when that was done, we'd borrow the letter from them. We'd give them some goggles and some gloves, and we'd give them a sledgehammer. And
so we'd say,
here's the car. And there was a high interest in the windows and the windshields and the mirrors and those kinds of things. And I would witness something that looked cool and exciting at first become something so incredibly healing. That pain was devastating. And they took it out in that physical way, like you mentioned, on this car, on this other physical object that wasn't another person.
Right.
That wasn't their child.
Right.
And it wasn't themselves. Because so often we do that. We beat ourselves up so brutally. I've seen a lot of memes recently of, like four individuals there's like an adult yelling at another adult who's then yelling at a child who's then like yelling at the dog,
right,
or something, right, like that. And I don't think we fully recognize and understand that pattern and that cycle, and the destruction that comes from that. And so that was an exhausting exercise. That was pretty much all they did that day. We'd give them a little break, and then we'd gather back together and we'd process through it. But it was, in my opinion, so needed, so beneficial. But we can't do those. I don't think we can do those things on our own.
Yeah.
Need the support. And it's not because we're less than or we're weak. It's, this is big time. This is serious.
Mm-hmm.
So
I love that story. Yeah. And it's so true. I used to, my kids will tell me, remember how you used to be, mom, which I'm grateful. I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. I hadn't done any work yet, guys. I'm sorry. Yeah. But like what my daughter, my oldest, talking about, she's like, yeah, you used to be angry more. You used to like get short with us all the time. You used to like just be like more irritable, you know? And now I'm just like, I'm in it with, I'm not saying I don't ever get irritable. I do, but it's way less, you know? And then when I do, I'm like, dude, what's going on? My immediate thought is, what's going on with me? Not what's going on with them.
Where am I at right
you
now?
Know? Yeah. And it's in like a such more loving way. And I think, you know, I love that you shared that story, because I'm kind of onto like trauma and the body, right now. I'm, Catherine Pert is an amazing researcher on that, has a book called Your Body is Your Subconscious Mind. And I do think there is like it's so much value in being able to release these things that are stored up in our bodies. Even in, you know, I am a fan of plant medicines. When I did ayahuasca, like, I would witness many people, they were just like shaking. And I kind of wondered, you know, I was like, interesting. Cause I haven't really seen that happen on very many other medicines. I just wondered if there's like a release thing happening, but just, you know, that's, I'm not saying making any claims here or anything, but I, at least for me, I think it's been beneficial. And I think there's a reason, like when you see, like, especially men, you get them, you see them upset, they want to like punch a hole in the wall or whatever. Like, hey, maybe that's like natural, but just go do the bed or the pillow so you don't have to like fix your drywall later. But maybe a release is healthy, you know, on the physical side.
Well, let's list out the pros and cons. And I can choose to punch a hole in the wall. And I've done that in my past as a young person.
Yeah.
Usually was kicking a hole in the wall because I wasn't
just
dumb.
Annoying
I'm not
to gonna fix.
Break my knuckles.
Yeah.
It's dumb. You know, let me put a shoe on and, because there's a visual change.
Yeah.
If I can see that hole in the wall, like there's something interesting in the brain in that split second where it's like I can see the destruction.
Wow. Yeah.
I think after two or three times of doing that, or whether it was maybe tackling a friend into the wall and breaking the drywall, having to repair it or pay to repair it, I was like, okay, let's come up with a different method, you know, which is fascinating because that tells us we have a little bit of self-control, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that we're totally powerless and we're just, sorry, I see red or I black out.
Yeah.
I don't have control.
Yeah.
Not true. Not okay. Not acceptable.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about, punching a pillow, going for a walk. There is absolutely a body release. There's energy that needs to come out.
Yeah.
And earlier when you were mentioning your childhood and your ex-husband and the shame, the taboo-ness of so many things.
Right.
I'm involved in that culture. I'm involved in that religion. I was, I was removed from that religion for a period in my life, where that darkness was very present. And I was able to get things sorted out and feel a sense of freedom, and feel a sense of, agency that I'm choosing in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm choosing,
mm-hmm.
not because someone pressured me,
mm-hmm.
not because somebody told me, but something I talk about a lot because I have many, many clients and have, many friends who either are on the fence or have left or have whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
a faith crisis, a transition, questions, concerns. One of those biggest struggles is how intensely we judge everybody else. In my opinion, my experience and my observation has been we're judging ourselves even more.
Oh yeah.
But we can't look at that. We let me rephrase that. We refuse to look at that. And sometimes it's a little bit closer to our consciousness, and other times it's buried really deep and we just focus on you know, oh, this person's wearing that, or they said hell and damn, or they're doing this, what's going on? You know, they shopped on Sunday, and, you know, I go to meetings, and on the way on a Sunday and on the way home, I asked my wife, like, hey, you know, I'm going to get you a drink. Like at the end of all of this, if anybody else is looking at me going, why is he doing that? They got work to do.
Yeah.
Now, as I say that, I'm saying it for myself.
Right.
If I look at any other human and go, ooh, they've got work to do, or I try to elevate myself or something like that, I've got work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
yeah,
that's fine. Because we all do. We all have that work. And it's a glorious invitation to keep going, to keep moving in that right direction.
Yeah, we project our own self-judgments and so we don't have to own it. We put it on it. It's the neighbor. He's doing that to me. Yeah. You know, it's like he might not actually be thinking anything, but you're taking the accountability away and putting it on them. And they might be. And even if they are, you know, I think you bring up such a good thing. And this is something I talk about with my clients a lot too. For me, I've only ever had one panic attack in my life. And it was when I was leaving Mormonism. I had no idea. I mean, I think I have like, you know, normal levels of anxiety through the day and know how to cope with that. Well, I don't associate with having like anxiety, you know, like, but the fear of what other people would think when I was leaving Mormonism was so great that I was like, am I having a heart attack? Am I dying? I'm like sinking into the floor. I can't breathe. Like I can't see. Like it was scary, you know? And it was that much anxiety at that time in my life because I hadn't done work because I was so afraid of what people would think. And, you know, it's funny now it's been what, 6-7 years. And I like, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'll just be real. I'll like, you know, my ex-husband still lives in the neighborhood I lived where that all happened. So I go there all the time to pick up my kids. And sometimes I'll see some of the people from church that I was like, what are they going to think? And I'm like, just looking, I'm like, I can't believe I ever gave a crap what that guy thought of me. Like, why would I care what he thinks of me? He's not even in my life. I don't even know him. Like, you know? And so it is just a symbol of my own growth, you know? And it's good, you know, whether you're in religion or not, like that's something you can get past and let go of, you know, and it's really based in self-judgment. So I think you hit the nail on the head on that.
I think it's also not even, as I heard you say that, it's not about that guy being less than or being, you're not judging him. It's saying, why was he renting space in my head?
Yeah. Like what? I don't even know you barely. Yeah.
You know, why did I care so much about that? And it was because, in my opinion, it's because there's an internal discord.
Yeah.
There's something that's incongruent in your soul and within you. And so as you work through that later on, it's not like, oh, look at that.
I'm better than him. Yeah. It's just like,
that doesn't matter to me.
Right.
That's not on my plate.
Right. Right
now. I have higher priorities, deeper priorities.
Right.
And so.
Yep.
Well, I know that time it's flown. And I know you've got something coming up real quick. I'd love to reconnect with you. I'd love to expand on some of the conversation that we've started. I've been over here writing down some notes and I have a lot of thoughts and perspectives on some of the things that you shared. And so I'd love to reconnect with you when the time is right.
To.
I can't thank you enough for jumping on today. Just so appreciate that. And tell everybody, I know that they can find you on Instagram. It's Coach Tara Garrison with two R's.
On the Garrison. Yes. T-A-R-A on my first name. And and I just have to say, thank you for facilitating this space. Like I know from experience, it can be a lot of work to be working with people directly and doing a podcast and all, you know, it's a lot and but it's so needed, you know, like, I have been told like intuitively, like we need a lot of hands on deck on the healing. So if you're willing and you have good intentions, roll up your sleeves and get to work. Cause we need a lot of help. So thanks for being on deck and rolling up your sleeves and thank you for allowing me to share today. And I hope it's been helpful to anybody who's listened. And you can find me. Instagram's probably the best. You can find me everything else off Instagram, Coach Tara Garrison. But I hope this has been helpful to anybody. And just, you know, if I can just leave one last thing, it would just be that, like, I know it's so hard to see it when you're in it, and you don't need to see it when you're in it. You don't need to like be like, okay, and someday this is going to have me be on a podcast like Tara and share this. Like, it doesn't need to be that. But I do just want to share that, like, I've been through so many different dark nights in my life where it just seems it's so long when you're in it. It is so long. It's like an eternity. Every day is an eternity. I'm telling you, like, there is healing in light. It's just been honoring my intuition. Like, there is something that will come in you and it's like pushing you towards this thing. And if you'll honor that, like, I'm telling you, there are forces in this life, like whatever you believe in, I don't even know what they are. but I know there's something that comes and it directs me. And it's just like, go this way, talk to that person, like, listen to that thing, like, say no to that, stop, you know, let go of that, like, try this. And if you honor that, like, I'm telling you, there's like support energetically there to help you get onto the light end of this thing. So yeah, there's light. There is light ahead. And that's why I said I would not trade any of the pain. Like you said, for you too, it's just because I would not be able to understand this light at this level if I hadn't experienced the darkness at that level. And I'm not saying that to be cliche. Like, that has been my life experience, you know? And so just want to share that for anybody who's hurting, like, that hurt, there is an equal or more amount of light and goodness that I feel like it's karma or whatever you want to call it that comes around eventually. So just know that.
Amen. I love it. I love it. Your website, taragarrison.com.
Yeah. Yep.
As well. So you guys check her out, especially you ladies that are looking for that extra support, whether it's outside of therapy, whether it's to get you a jump start, reach out to her, even if you just observe and even if you just watch. There's an energy and there's a safety around that. I think there are so many people out there who have great intentions, but maybe just aren't the right fit for different individuals.
Yeah.
And so I talk a lot in my therapy practice, I talk a lot that my first session with somebody, hey, this is a job interview. And I don't mean that sarcastically, I mean that genuinely. It's, yeah, are we the right fit together?
Totally.
I might be great in some areas. Well, I really struggle in others.
Right.
And I'm not an expert in every single thing.
Right.
A lot of my work is trauma and addiction and couples work and those kinds of things. And so something down the list, I'm not going to go, oh yeah, I'm a therapist, so let me help because I can help with everything. That's just not true.
Yeah.
And also I have a particular personality. I have particular mannerisms. And sometimes we just get bothered by how other people are, even if they'd be a great resource for us.
Yep.
It's great to interview. It's great and fine to fire somebody, you know, and move on to the next or keep trying. I usually tell people, if it's not the right fit, let's talk about that and let's find you who will be the right one.
Totally.
Because there's no ego in this. There's no pride in this. It's I want you to heal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think anybody who's really in this game, it's almost like I'll do anything to help anywhere I can sit. Whatever is best for you, I want that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned earlier, like, we're in this together. You know, let's roll up our sleeves. I left one treatment center that I credit with training me and I still feel like is my home, who hired me 4 different times to come work there. And I just think the world of those people. And as I left, she was my supervisor. She said, I hope that we won't lose touch. I hope we won't lose contact, or that we'll look at each other as competition, because I was going to go work somewhere else for a competitor, essentially. She said, I hope we won't look at ourselves as competition. We're on the same team. We're doing this work for the greater good. We're not competing.
Oh yeah.
You know? And I just, that's always stuck with me. And I try to live that as a one of my mantras, that we're in this together, we're doing work.
Oh yeah. And
there are those moments where I'm on the other side yet again, and I go, hey, I need some help. I need some support.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. And it's wonderful. And even my clients, I'm like, I'm not under no delusion that I have everything more figured out than you got. I don't know who has advice for her on that, you know, because we all have gifts to bring to the table. So yeah,
absolutely. Well, you're awesome. Keep doing your work. Just am amazed by your presence.
Thank you.
I'm amazed by that light. And so keep that up. And for you listening to us, thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully this has made your day just a little bit better, and keep doing the work.